Hello and welcome to the live stream live. I am your host, Joshua Schubart, and I hope you are having a beautiful New York Monday evening. Today's show mug is once again Ted Lasso because I love this show and I love the messaging in it. And I hope everyone is having a unbelievable, wonderful week so far. I know it's only Monday, but it could still be a good week so far. As usual, the live stream live is brought to you by Lucas Roasting Company. They are a wonderful New Hampshire indie roaster that I use personally. I know the Lucas family. They are wonderful people, and they make an exceptional product. It is a craft roaster that from order to ship takes about 3 days. And when you order it, they custom roast it for you. You can get 15% off your first order by using this promo code, the live stream live. I don't make any money off of this promo code. It is just there for you to use. Link is in my description or it's in my bio if you're watching on Instagram. As usual, we are streaming live to Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube live all at the same time. And I think that's pretty cool. We have an amazing person here today. His name is Quinn Kelsey. He is a opera star and a wonderful guy who I've had the pleasure to work with at the Metropolitan Opera. For the past 10 years or so, I've had the immense pleasure of working at the Metropolitan Opera House. As an actor, you get to kind of work in a ton of places, and at the Metropolitan Opera, they are constantly looking for actors with specializations such as hand combat experience, acrobatics, sword fighting, and I have many of those skills. And I've had the pleasure of working with Quinn in two operas now, Rigoletto and Tosca. And I specifically wanted to have Quinn on because he's not only a great person, but when an opera singer comes along, especially in the newer class of opera singer, that's really locked in, that's extremely dialed in, and is also considered an incredible actor, all of the actors start to chatter and talk about it, because there's this thing in the opera singer called the park and bark, where you just kind of like walk to the middle of the stage, hit your light, and then do your music, sing your song. And while it is extremely hard and technically brilliant and incredible, it's missing something. It's missing a really intricate human layer. And Quinn does this masterfully, and you'll meet him soon. As per usual, let's talk about what I've been watching and what I'm kind of feeling right now. So I recently watched 21 Bridges, which I know is a movie that's been out for a while, but it has Chadwick Boseman in it, and it is propaganda, and it is kind of like schlossky New York-y accent weirdness, but it was fun. It was fun to see. I was doing a bunch of cardio and just kind of popped it on. And it was one of those films that, you know, doesn't have a very complex plot, but some of the acting was very, very good, despite the plot being predictable and odd. And very like, I found a million kilos of cocaine. Let's lock down the city. Let's go shoot everybody and be in cars and flip over. It's a lot of fun, but feels stupid. I don't know what else to say, but it was a lot of fun. And there are times where that is what you just want to be watching. As for what I'm feeling, I guess, like, you know, there's a lot going on. There's the impending inauguration. There's the LA wildfires, which is, oh my goodness, that is some crazy, crazy shit going on. And my heart and everything goes out to everybody that's lost their homes or members of their family or pets, and especially to the incredibly brave firefighters that are out there just busting their asses, and especially the incarcerated firefighters that are being pulled out of prisons to just, you know, put out fires everywhere. They are heroes despite what they may have done to put them in jail. They are now out just risking their lives for the community. So I don't know if you saw in the news, but Neil Gaiman just got like really outed in like being like a horrible sexual predator. And I feel like I was talking to my wife about this, like everyone that I've like I really connected with or I felt like was really great or that I aspired to be like, not everybody, but quite a few people that I was like, I want to be like Neil. I want to be able to be like Louis C.K. You know, like people like this have turned out to be awful. The power dynamics and things of that nature that we have been talking about and trying to change over the years are still there in a lot of ways. It's just gotten a little bit quieter. I've worked with people even at the Opera House that still had the opportunity to work with pending investigations against them. And it just doesn't feel awesome, especially for, you know, a large male performer. Sometimes you get lumped in with these types of people, and other times you wonder what effects or impacts you can have on an art form as a whole, and try and like move that needle to bring it back more into reality. Many of us are just people that have kids and love art and are trying to entertain you or change something with what we're trying to perform. I would say that's fucking most of us. I would say there's a very small percentage of people that are trying to masturbate at you in a doorway. Unfortunately, these folks may get a platform or get some notoriety, and then people feel stuck. And I guess it just irks me. I don't know what else to say. I'm a survivor of SA, so when people like this are outed, it makes me both very happy and also very upset because this type of shit has been allowed to propagate. But hopefully we're seeing an upswing or a change, or, you know, like Neil Gaiman has done some incredible stuff, has written some incredible books, and was a pillar of the like sci-fi, fantasy, creative, comic book, everything community. So I guess we'll see where this goes. I don't think we're like in a Me Too place anymore, but I think maybe we're past there and in an accountability place maybe. Let's find out. So those are my thoughts for right now. And I can't think of a better way to transition into bringing on my guest than just this. Quinn Kelsey is a really incredible guy. I met him by working at the Metropolitan Opera. I've worked with him in rooms. I've worked with him on stage. And he certainly didn't have to, but he makes everyone around him feel comfortable and part of everything that is going on. And to me, that is a mark of a true performer, a true team player. And everyone, welcome Quinn Kelsey to the show. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, Quinn. How are you?
All right. Boy, do I have you all fooled.
Oh, man. Yeah. you're actually a terrible person.
Thank you. I appreciate
you're
that.
Welcome. You're welcome. So you are originally from Hawaii, yeah?
Yes, sir.
So native Hawaiian. What got you into an opera interest?
My mother was classically trained. She never really had the opportunity to have any kind of career as a working opera singer, but she had a few opportunities early on, and then and then decided she wanted a family. And she was a choir accompanist, and then she was a choir director, and then she kind of, maybe fill in the gaps isn't the right phrase, but in a way, then she filled in the rest of the gaps with her own solo work.
Okay.
Not as much opera as I'm sure she would have liked or anybody else would have, but concert work. There's a large municipal band in Honolulu called the Royal Hawaiian Band, and so she got to sing with them as a featured soloist for a time. But she, for whatever she was able to do in her craft, you know, she made a pretty significant name for herself. And one of the ways that I like to characterize the environment that my sister and I came into is that in some ways I felt like we cheated, because it was basically that we were born into it.
Oh, it's not cheating. Cheating.
Well, and I appreciate you saying that, but you know, it just so many of my colleagues and close friends had to work their asses off to get to a place, you know, of supreme appreciation and love for the art form. And on top of that, the ability to get themselves hired as working artists. And
sure.
Whereas in so many ways, it was much easier for me and my sister that.
And why do you say that? Because you grew up around it and understood it?
Very much so. Whether we actually knew early on what certain things about classical singing actually were, you know, names of terms and things, that we absorbed so much musicianship, being dragged into mom's various choirs and other musical entities around town growing up. And, you know, it came so easily to the two of us.
Well, I mean, the craft of opera is so incredibly hard. You know, like you could maybe have some sort of like more advanced understanding of what's going on, but at the end of the day, you have to train and practice and understand what it is to sing operatically.
Sure. And here I am.
And here you are. I mean, you didn't just arrive at the Metropolitan Opera, right?
Of course not.
So, in the beginning of your, like, is it hard to leave Hawaii? Like, what are the roadblocks in opera? I mean, we can talk about, I guess, like opera being so white for so long, but now it seems like it's changing to the point where real talent and real shit begins to shine through.
As I believe it always should. Mm-hmm. You know, that at the end of the day, you got to be able to make that cut. You know, you have to. It can't just be luck. You actually have to have the talent. You have to be able to back up hype. Maybe, you know, you for however you do it, you build a reputation. You know, you get groundswell, if that's a good term. You get a lot of people talking about you. But then you got to be able to get on that stage and do it. You got to be able to get out there and look like you know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
Instead of, as you say, well, I know that at one point in the business, park and bark was a very acceptable thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
In my humble opinion, the audience comes to be told a story, and it's just more difficult to understand that story if they just stand there and sing. And as you say, opera singing is terribly difficult, and so there's definitely something comforting about just being able to stand there and make the noise, you know. And whereas staging and drama adds another layer of complexity, you know, a fair amount of distraction, and it's the kind of distraction that can really screw you up on stage while you're performing. Having said that, my personal feeling is that that's what you get paid to do. That's what you get hired to do.
It's true.
Put all of that together into a product that allows you to be the storyteller or one of them on the stage.
Did you take acting classes?
Not formally, but as a young artist, my first studio work was at a brand new program that the Hawaii Opera Theater started. No, 1998, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And as with what people that would expect from a training program for young artists, one of the things that we got to do was acting or just, you know, dramatic interpretation of sorts, solo or with colleagues, depending, you know, for doing a scene or for just doing an aria or something. And then to an extent, I got that at the other programs where I studied. And then definitely my last chunk of development, I spent 3 years in the Opera Center at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, and there was definitely a good amount of movement and acting training.
Well, I think that's fantastic, and I think it really shows through in the way that you perform, Quinn. The Metropolitan Opera is an opera house like no other opera house in the world. Just the sheer scale and having the three-person chorus and also having a slew of professional actors that know what they're doing. It's a thing that really doesn't happen everywhere else. And I don't think people understand that either. And when they arrive at the Met, a lot of people kind of get fucked up. Like they're like, what, you know, like you hear about, but until you step on that stage and you look out into the house, you don't really understand what is happening to you. And you have a way of just being in it with everybody. And it's admirable because a lot of people don't do it, and they should, because it'll get them a better everything. It'll get them a better experience, a better performance, and a much better time at the opera house. Because you're a baritone, so in the acting world, you would be considered like a character actor. So would that be what baritonism is in the world of opera?
I mean, not necessarily. More so, I guess to help the discussion, I would say I would look at it this way instead. Baritones usually play the fathers, as you know, or villains, also, as you know. you know, you have the Concern Brothers, very specific situations. We have the pleasure of being the romantic character, but yeah, usually we're relegated to villains and concerned family members or parental figures. And so it's, you know, because I play mostly those type of characters, you know, I don't have to, not that I would ever have the problem stretching out into some other type of character. I have the luxury of kind of sticking to those types of characters. And so it's nice to be able to, that I don't have to travel so far dramatically from one show to the next, you know, that, okay, I'm playing a father here and I'm playing a father here. And then I'm playing a villain over here. Okay. And then I'm going to be the concerned cousin or headstrong brother. Okay. I mean, you know, it's kind of the same thing. And then, oh, there's another villain. So I kind of, my range of characters kind of stay in a relatively focused realm.
Sure.
And so to add to that, I mean, usually, I guess they wouldn't be considered character actors, that they're not there mostly for the drama, that in terms of the storytelling, you know, they are written in with really specific their characters are really specific parts of the storytelling, whereas a character actor would be, in my humble opinion, more of a secondary or tertiary kind of a
that's not true anymore.
Sorry?
That's not true anymore.
Okay.
I mean I'm getting complaints of an echo from the chat, so I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. But sure. But you know, like a character actor, in my opinion, you know, is basically what you just said.
Okay.
As it's the father of the villain or a person who is like that in a movie or a TV show or like even a play. Bit parts are kind of what you were talking about. Like, you know, like the one-line roles or the people that are waiters or things of that nature.
Sure. Well, then I am. Sorry, we were trying to figure this out earlier, and I feel like I wasn't any help at all.
Oh no, it's okay. I'm just trying to figure it out. Am I too close? Do I need to get closer to the microphone? No, I'm just loudly echoing.
There was still an echo when I had the headphones on, right?
I don't know. Why don't you try? All right. It'll be the troubleshooting middle part of the stream, which is great.
Yeah, right. Hey, check it out, people. You know, we aren't perfect. Hee hee. And?
I don't know. It's a lower echo.
All right,
fine.
Maybe this sound was too strong coming out of my speaker, and so the internal mic was picking it up.
It's probably like that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm probably just speaking very loudly because I'm excited.
You're very excited, Josh.
I'm such an excited man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people are saying that that's better. So that's good. So we are back and we are better than ever.
Better than ever.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, yeah, I would equate, like, baritone to be to be like to be the equivalent to a character actor, like a Philip Seymour Hoffman, right? Like, to me, that's a character actor.
Then I'm a character actor, because
yeah, that's a character actor.
That's all what I do.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, meaningful work. But you never get to be in love. You always get to be in excruciating, horrible pain. Woo!
Yeah. Ooh. Meanwhile, we stare at the tenor and go, "You bastard."
You get everything. Mm. You get all the. Well, you've been getting your flowers as of late, which has been wonderful to see. And you've been playing roles that you haven't been able to before because you weren't old enough yet.
Sure.
Like Scarpia here at the Opera House. And you're one of the best I've seen. And I've done that show there probably... I've been in that thing since 2018 when it first opened.
Okay.
I've seen probably like, dude, I don't know, like 10 or 12 Scarpias.
Sure.
You're one of the best.
You're just saying that.
It's because of how specific you are in that role. That role is such a fucking beast, right? Like, Act 2 is such a monster of a act. And the way that it was staged and the way that David McVicker created it originally, it's a very acting heavy scene. He made it so that all the actors and all the opera singers are working in the same energy in the same space to create this world. But it all your that character is the linchpin, and if the Scarpia isn't fucking rocking, then it's not working. And your specificity and your little detail work really brought that shit alive. And I saw a really great review of this current like block of Tosca, where it's currently being played by Bryn Terfel, who's like one of the like legendary Sir Bryn Terfel, knighted by the Queen. And what I love about this review is that it talks about yours and his. They don't compare them and say one is better. They say they are different and they are both great. And you awesome. Do not see that ever happen in an opera review. So congratulations. That's all I wanted to say. Like,
thank you.
Yeah, like, Scarpia is a role that you kind of like sought for a long time. When you finally got into the guy, like, I know you've probably been working on him for a long time. What was your way in? Like, how did you attack that character?
So I had my first two outings in the spring and summer of 2021. And the first one wasn't ideal because we were still way within COVID restrictions. Mm. And so they basically trimmed everyone off the show except for the three leads and the shepherd boy. And they chopped it all up and rearranged it and slapped it all back together and called it the tragedy of Tosca. I almost said Carmen, because they do that too. Because it had to be like, it could only be like 60 minutes. Because it had to be no intermission so that people wouldn't be encouraged to, you know, to mill around during an intermission type of a thing, which is slightly funny because everybody's milling around when they come in.
And they show up and when they're in their seats.
Milling around when they leave, so, okay. So that one was, I mean, it wasn't hard, but it you know, I would have loved the first one to have been complete. But that's okay, we did that, and it was my first really big, really decent taste of the role. And then the second one, the first one, it was just in concert style, because then again, you know, we had to keep a distance. And then the second one was semi-stage, and it wasn't totally complete, but it was a lot more complete than what the first one had been. And there was a lot more interaction with the other singers, so that was better. But you know, so it's been sort of simmering for 3 years, and I'd seen this production at least a couple times in the past, and I mean I was so chomping at the bit to be able to do it. You know, I mean, all the other, for example, all the other characters that I do, to some extent, they are complex because there is some sort of, you know, they come to some sort of emotional or psychological climax where they then have to, you know, make serious decisions to then move in an opposite direction or something, you know. So yep. In Rigoletto, he's a huge asshole in the beginning, and everybody knows it, and he just gets away with it, and the courtiers all love him until his big secret is divulged, and you know, they don't think anything about it because they just think that this is his girl on the side, not knowing that is his offspring, and you know, then the whole thing explodes from that, and it's how is he gonna decide to advance from there?
Sure.
You know, Traviata. You know, my son is cavorting with the town working girl, and you know, I'm an old school father, and I don't approve. And so I come up with all of these preconceived notions about what she's about, and that's it. And then I actually meet her, and oh, you're a human being, and you're actually very thoughtful, and you're just in a really bad situation, and you're not just out for my money through my son. Okay, I feel like an asshole now, and I have to do something, you know, but most of the stuff that I do, it goes in one direction, and then you come to a climactic moment, and then the character track ends up taking a different course.
Sure.
Scarpia, he starts at point A and he goes in one direction until he falls off the cliff.
Yeah, so for our non-opera fans, which there are probably quite a few here.
Sure.
Not that they're not fans, they just haven't been into the opera. Scarpia is like a real piece of shit. Like, he is trying to basically just like blackmail the lead, Tosca, into having sex with him by any means necessary. Mm. Like, torturing her boyfriend, like, all this crazy shit. And then, like, threatening to have him executed, but then like making up all these fake charges, having him tortured by a guy, and then saying that she's that he'll pardon her, him, if she has sex with him, and then writes a totally fake pardon, and then she murders him. So like it's a whole nuts, but it's like that character is the quintessential villain, right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, master manipulator, and that's one of the my humble opinion, I would say that's one of the most difficult parts of the drama of the role, and then of course you weave the music so that because it is a huge part of the character, of course, but because he's such a manipulator, he is such a manipulator, but it's that the composer and the librettist write all of that manipulation of his character into the role, mm-hmm. you know, using crazy dynamics, you know, when he's trying to be all soft and sensitive and, oh, everything's fine. And then he'll just flip you know, 2 minutes later and scream at her. And it's a, he's got these crazy Jekyll and Hyde moments where he's like, oh, no, that's not what I meant. Oh, everything's fine. And then he'll turn around and just be like, I'm going to kill your boyfriend and you're going to watch and da, da, da. And then I still want you to go to bed with me. Ha ha. You know? And I think that's one of the hardest parts that so many singers who sing this part, become very overwhelmed because it's not just that the director has this concept where you got to flip back and forth. It's actually in the music. It doesn't say flip back and forth, but it's just the way that it's
written.
The text and the dynamics, you know, the loudness or softness of the sound. It's written. It perfectly depicts this idea of a Jekyll and Hyde kind of a character of you know that accents what a master manipulator Scarpia is, and it's difficult to do because mm-hmm. you know as we've already said, singing opera is its own bear of a thing.
Sure.
But you know, you get out there and as you also said that, you know, that there are a lot of singers who want to do the park and bark. They just want to walk down center and sort of emote in their body, but just have the flexibility and the comfortability to just stand there and sing the music because it is very, very hard.
Hard as fuck, yeah.
And the thing for me is I get off on being able to take the dramatic and the vocal and mix it together and build this complete monster of a character,
yeah.
and be able to perform it on that stage, on that set, at that company. And it's a gas, man. I mean, there's just nothing like having one. So one of the ways I like to categorize it is when you do it right, you can have everybody in the palm of your hand like this. Mm-hmm. And as long as whatever you do on stage, you totally meant to do, and you convince the audience that that's what you meant to do, how are they to ever be the wiser that there's anything else that was going to happen, that it's you true. Did anything wrong?
Yeah.
So one of the I said this a while before, I guess it was maybe like a master class or something, and trying to get young singers to understand that you have so much power on a stage as an actor, as a singer, that, you know, you could walk out there and drop your pants and sing. And as long as you convince the audience that's what you meant to do, you know, then maybe they don't flinch, and maybe they go, okay, well, what does this mean? That they're not just freaked out that you're half naked on the stage. Because as long as you sell it, then the audience, you hope the audience goes, wait, there's some kind of meaning behind this. You know, it's like you walk out in full on Shakespeare kind of period dress,
yeah.
You know, and you walk out there, looking like British aristocracy or whatever, and then suddenly you launch into Metallica. As long as you sell it, you know, as long as you're 100% in it, then the audience, you know, you as long as you convince the audience, then, you know, how do they not know that that's what was meant all along?
I agree with you, and I think one of the things about your performances and why they're so compelling is because of how grounded you are inside of them. And I wonder if that comes with, because what a lot of people don't know is that when a opera singer starts playing a role, they play that role fucking everywhere. So, like, you've played Rigoletto in most of the opera houses in the world, right?
Maybe not most, but a bunch, sure.
A bunch, like more than five.
More than five. Maybe six.
And you've probably done like more than 100 performances of this character.
By now.
So you still manage to keep this guy fresh. Like, I've watched you on stage, and you still manage to keep this vibrancy in a character that you have played over and over again. And I know that that's the job, right? And I know that, like, to, like, probably, like, say that to, like, you, like, you're just like, yeah, that's just what I fucking do. That's just what I have to do because it's my job.
Right.
But it's also very impressive, right? Because it's being alive in repetition is such a skill that a lot of people don't have.
Okay.
So, and it's a lot of what people don't like about the opera, modern audiences, is that there's a lacking of, like, true humanity and, like intricate vibrance. I don't know how else to, like, describe that. And then when you see it, you understand. Like I came into the opera, like, it was my first gig out of grad school. They hired me to be a sword fighter. I had never seen an opera before in my life. I get on stage and I'm like, what in the actual fuck is all of this? There's 1,000 people. They're all loud. They sound incredible. And then, you know, it wasn't until I started to see certain people really get to it. Like, you know, like Andrew Romanofsky and, you know, like, names are escaping me, but there's a lot more, but like, people that really, like you and like Bryn and like people that are really, like, there, they understand the importance of what they're doing. This ancient art form with this incredibly hard shit to sing from way, way back in a period of time that almost no one understands, to be able to translate that and let people have it while they're hearing a language that they don't even speak or even comprehend is killer and amazing. And it's wonderful to watch you do it. And I guess that big pile of compliments is, how do you, as an opera singer, keep something that you've done so many times so fresh? Like, is there a trick? Are there, like, tools that you learn when you're in school, things of that nature?
I guess one of the easiest ways to say it is that I'm anal in that way, that I need to keep it fresh, because otherwise I'll get bored, and I just don't ever want to get to that point. But here's the best part. For example, I've done Rigoletto so much, I'm so comfortable with it, it's so second nature, that it makes it easier. Well, so this production, and we map out and rehearse the staging so that the storytelling is the way that the director wanted. But, you know, after 4 or 5 shows, and you got a ton more, I mean, there's nothing wrong with just changing little things here, little things there, you know, lingering here a little bit longer before you make your next move, or, you know, just playing around with it so that it stays fresh, and you don't ever go crazy so that you distract the hell out of yourself. But instead, what I end up doing is sort of creeping out to the edge of the precipice. You know, how far can I change it and play, so that I then have to react to those changes so that I still keep it within bounds of what the production is supposed to do. And it's just, it helps me to stay frosty.
Stay fresh.
But then, you know, I won't ever screw up any of my other colleagues, anybody else on stage, but it's just a way for me to to not let it get stagnant.
Sure.
And it's a flexibility and a gift that I can give myself, that I am so comfortable in it that you know, maybe well, that it definitely keeps me on my toes, and maybe I can help everyone else to just not ever let it get stagnant as well. That I'm going to change this little bit up here. It's not going to screw you up, Josh, but it's just, it gives you just an extra second or another second to react in a slightly different way. You know, like, so in Act Two, when I come out for the big scene where I confront all the courtiers and say, no, that's not my side chick. That's actually my daughter. Ha ha ha. And I come walking out through you and John Stemack and all the other actors and then all the chorus. And I'm not singing yet, so I'm making little comments under my breath to you guys, yeah, and to the chorus guys. And you know, instead of just being the opera singer and being focused and I have to walk through this crowd and go out there and sing. No, because then that'll actually screw me up.
Yeah.
So instead, I'm distracting myself ever so, not a whole lot, but just a little, and just you know, needling my one friend that I've known for 20 years over here in the back, because he knows it's me, and making a funny face at this chorus guy. And then, okay, you know, I still know exactly what's coming next. And then hopefully that the audience, on top of all you guys around me, see how much fun that I'm having. Mm-hmm. And that I help you guys to see that, don't, you know, why so serious? You know, just, you know, lighten up. We have our responsibilities, but yes, part of it is serious, but we're still going to have a good time. See? Haha. We're going to have good fun. Oh, okay. I got to go. You know, we'll pick this up later, and then we move on. And it's, If you don't have enough fun with your work like this, you'll read it on my body. The chorus will read it on my body, and the audience will after a while go, yeah, it looks really striking, but there's a part of me that feels like he's not settled, or there's something lacking, you know, he's, you know, I read the synopsis and this is supposed to be happening, and it, I'm not convinced that he already has this idea in his head that he's going to spring on them, that I'm watching him and he's not sure what he wants to do. And I want to project as much as possible to the audience that this is what's happening, you know. Am I allowed to let you and the audience know that I know what's going on, or, you know, or whatever it is? And yeah, because that's our job, because it's, because the audience paid their money to be told the story, and that's the way that I tell the story. That I
would say that, like, your whole talking about having fun and bringing that with you, and like bringing people all along for the ride around you, is honestly, it's like one of the key components to a great acting performance is fun at the bottom. Fun is why you're here. Fun is why you do this work. And if you don't infuse everything with fun, then like, yeah, then you're just doing a job, right? Then just like make a lot of license plates in the fucking factory and make your money.
And that's not to say that fun means positive and upbeat. Absolutely. But it just means so invested that you're convincing everyone around you so much of who you are in the character that you almost hope that they'll forget that it's Quinn Kelsey, and that all they'll be thinking about is Rigoletto, and I know this guy because I'm on stage with him, and this is Rigoletto, you know, and and that they lock in, that all of you lock in that much, and maybe further than you ever would have before that night or in rehearsals, because I'm showing you how overly invested I am. You know, that maybe we don't know what's going to happen, but you guys always trust that whatever it is, you know, we're going to get the job done, and it's not going to go off the rails, that it might be totally wild and off in one direction, but we're still in total control, and that's the exciting part of it. It's like,
yeah,
you know, we might do something crazy, but it's okay that you see my body language, you see the ways that I'm behaving, and you know that I'm always going to be in control of it.
Sure. So I guess since you've reached this like level of working at the Metropolitan Opera and things of that nature, the people that come to review the shows tend to be kind of like dicks about it, and they review them pretty harshly. And I understand why, because it's the Metropolitan Opera and blah blah blah. Do you read those?
Yes and no.
I feel like you sort of do, and then you're just like, fuck it, I can't. This is gonna just like fuck me up in the future, right?
Sometimes, you know, and so once in a while, somebody will share with me a good one, and you know, it's always a good time to read a good review, but.
Feels good.
Well, but then there are other ones that are not so positive, and you gotta just accept those and move on. You know, there are some singers who just say that I don't ever read reviews, so that it won't ever fuck me up in the head, and I understand that fully. I don't know. I think it's healthy for me to process the ones that are not stellar every once in a while, just as a way to remind myself that I'm human, that this is not a perfect art, and you know, we should never expect it to be, and that people will have their opinions, and if not then I don't think there's anything wrong, but just that I don't know. I don't think it would be healthy if all the reviews were positive and total praise.
I agree with you. I mean, art is extremely subjective, and everyone has their own opinion about what is good. But in my opinion, that if you're not pissing someone off with your work, then you're not doing your work right. Right.
Sure. Sure.
It's just because the idea is that you want to invoke emotion, no matter what that emotion is.
100%.
Like when I was in Lady Macbeth of Mensensk at the Met, people were walking out of that show like halfway the first act because we were, it was a visceral height, like hypersexuality, like nightmare of a show in the most beautiful way, and I love being in it. And that actually got like a New York Times like 5 stars crazy review, and they never do that shit. But every night we were like, if people don't walk out of this fucking show, we didn't do this right.
Right.
So art is gonna bother people, and I think it should.
It should.
And, yeah,
it should.
So a bad review to me is like, hey, you felt something, even if it was ill will.
Well, because then it can't always be about us. We can do what we can do to produce a product, and all we can do is send it out,
right?
And it's, you know, and then we need to decide what's our definition of success for that product.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you say, and I believe it, that art is partly for causing emotions. And as long as we cause some kind of emotion, then I feel like we've succeeded. Sure. Because if not, then the audience will think twice about opera, period. You know, it's, whether...
Yeah.
No, go
I ahead. Mean, opera is a thing that more people need to see, especially now. I say it at least one time. Like, so you have to see opera at least one time just to fully understand what it is, the spectacle, the power, the like majesty of the whole thing. You'll never see anything else like it in the history of anything, especially at the Metropolitan Opera.
Well, and if you're hesitant, you know, you don't know it at all, but you want to go, I mean, reach out to the company, you know, ask, find reviews of whatever shows they're doing, you know, read a synopsis of the story so that you have some kind of clue which one, so that you have some kind of clue of what's being put on, mm-hmm. so that you can decide which one will be the best first opera for you to go see.
Yeah.
Or don't, and just gamble and pick one and just please leave yourself a little vulnerable and wide open to accept whatever you're going to, and let it. One of the things my dad always said, my dad is a natural talent, you know, appreciates a ton of different genres of music, and with opera he just said, how can you not just let it affect you in some way?
Yeah.
But the only thing is that you have to formally allow it to happen. You have to leave yourself open to it so that you can absorb something. If you just go in there with preconceived notions, I mean, you're not going to get anything out of it. You gotta make yourself vulnerable to an extent.
No, it's true, because opera is weird. I don't know how else to really say that, but like, and especially being in the audience of an opera and watching an opera, it almost kind of assaults you in a way.
Sure.
Like you have to open, it's true, you gotta open up and let that shit in, because if you don't, there's gonna be like a, what is this? it's a lot, yeah.
And especially if you know nothing about opera.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the easiest ways for you to get in your own way is to make decisions about it, about something that you know nothing about before you even go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
it's true.
Enjoy the spectacle, because it's going to be a spectacle no matter what.
Oh yeah. So right now you're in Aida. Yes.
Yes, sir.
At the Opera House.
Yes.
In a brand new version of Aida, which hasn't happened in, I don't know, 60 years or something like that. Like a long, long time.
Long time.
Longer, maybe?
Not 50? Sure.
40?
50 generously. Mm-hmm. But it could be longer.
It's a brand new version, and it's reimagined. You are once again doing a masterful job in your role. And I think everybody should go see it. It's still running now. You can go catch it now.
Well, it's running until the end of the month, and then there will be a new cast coming back later in the season.
Will you be coming back with that cast?
Unfortunately not.
That's bullcrap. Quit.
Well, I mean, we do have to let the other children play with the toys as well.
I think that's, and that's a thing that I think is so interesting about especially the Metropolitan Opera and the fact that they work in rep, is that you get the opportunity to see multiple people play the same roles. So it's like you can come back and see the same show, and it's not the same show.
Hmm. Well, and by default, you know, it's because not all singers and not all companies have the luxury of employing the same singers, of singing at one company for a long stretch, you know.
Sure.
I mean, the year that Rigoletto opened, you know, whoever was supposed to have sung Rigoletto the second time that season had to pull out, and I was available. And they said, "Well, do you want it again?" I was back for another role in a different opera, and because I was there already, they said, "Do you want to sing the rest of the Rigoletto in the season?" And I said, "Yeah."
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was nice that it worked out that way, but normally, you know, a singer can't ever expect to be able to have the monopoly on more than one chunk of the same production in one season. So
interesting. Yeah. So we have crossed over the hour mark.
Yes.
I know it went fast, and you know, I know you had the best time of your life. But if you could leave one piece of advice to young baritones coming up in the opera world now, what do you feel would be the most significant thing for them to either work on or look out for?
I would say that this is not just for baritones, but this can extend to all young singers, and it's one of the hardest. I would say it's one of the hardest things, one of the hardest principles for young people. Period. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with anybody, but it's the one constant that keeps coming back to my mind, not just for opera singers, but for folks in their 20s and early 30s, patients.
Mm.
That on the one hand, you know, for young singers and for young ones, period, for young ones both. You know, part of you is trying to go with the instinct that I need to be taking advantage of everything that I have in front of me right now, because then if I don't grab onto it now, I might never get the chance again. Or if I don't monopolize on all the opportunities in front of me right now, somebody else will.
Yeah.
And sure, that's all valid. But coming back to the classical singer, opera singer side, if you rush too hard too quickly into a career, you might severely shorten your career before it ever happens.
Right.
And it's one of the toughest things to contemplate, because, you know, shouldn't I be, you know, I don't want to be left in the dust while everybody else advances, you know, and it happens all the time. You know, young singers who need more time because of their voices, because of the stage where they're at and their development at that point, whatever it is, you know, nobody's going to develop the same way. No, some people will surge ahead into success, while others just by matter of course take longer. But then you advance 10 years into the future, and the ones who rose quickly might then plateau or might kind of fall off a little bit as their trajectory, their career, you know, possibly just exploded too big too soon.
Sure.
And so then it needs time to balance out, and so they might kind of fall off a little bit, whereas the others, like myself, took longer because took longer to hit that momentum to really explode onto the scene, because for example, for myself, that people either didn't know what my voice was going to do, or they did and they knew that they needed to be so careful with my voice, because on the one hand there was the possibility for so many different things. And so because of that, it was like, okay, we've seen this before. And, you know, while there are all these immediate successes that could happen, there's also the possibility for something that'll take longer. So what we need to do is to, in my case, to sit down with the singer and explain all this to them so that they understand why they may otherwise feel like they've been left behind when in fact it's not the case at all.
Sure.
And it's this idea that identical twins who's in a hypothetical situation, identical twins who sing all the same rep, you know, are basically carbon copies of one another. There's no 100% guarantee that their careers will be the same, that the voice will work 100% exactly the same. It's just, it's Mother Nature. It's not exact. And you have to always keep that in the back of your mind, that it's no two people will ever develop and start a career and end a career the same way, and or make the noise the same way. Yeah. And you really just have to hold on to this idea of patience. That there are no shortcuts in the road to being a working classical slash opera singer.
Patience is great advice for literally every art form ever. And it's a thing that I talk about a lot when I speak to younger actors. You just have to trust, be patient, and just keep working to improve yourself and to make yourself better and more marketable. It is the best advice that you could give anybody. So I'm really happy that you said it.
I really believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my friend, I really appreciate you being on the show. I hope you had as much fun as I had.
No, I don't ever want to do this ever again.
I hope I never see you again. Like, I don't want to see you in the hallways or in the rehearsal room.
There he is. Come here, Schubert.
Oh, God, no, I can't handle that. All right. All right, buddy, I'll speak to you soon, okay? Thank you so much.
I hope I see you soon.
I hope I see you soon, too, man.
All right, take care.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for coming to live stream live. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. I have a membership that you can access via the links in my bio or the links underneath this video. I have merch, I have things, I have stuff. Everything costs about the same as a latte a month. It's and speaking of lattes a month, the live stream live is brought to you by Lucas Roasting Company. use this promo code, and if you buy coffee, please tell me about it. I love their coffee. Use the promo code the live stream live for 15% off your first order. They have tons of stuff. You can buy in 8-ounce sizes all the way up to like 10-pound bags. It's a crazy place. But anyway, thank you so much, and I'll see you next week. Bye.